Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Sukkah Daf Chof Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin 5 lines from the top of Daf Chof Aleph. Before we begin the shiur, let us point out that we left off in the middle of a discussion. We were analyzing the Machlokas Reb Yehuda and the Rabbonan in the Mishnah, where Reb Yehuda said that an ohel that is not made bidei odom, that's not made by man, an ohel is an overhang, a canopy, something that overshadows, if it's not made by man, so it does not have the status of ohel. And that has broad ramifications, particularly in the area of Tumas Mace. We have elaborated on this in previous shiurim, so we're going to suffice it with that as far as the element of Tumas Mace and how it figures in the realm of Ohel. On the side of our Gemara, we have a nosei, a topic heading, and we indicate Hemshech, that this is a continuation of what we discussed in our previous shiurim. We mentioned that according to Reb Yehuda, an Ohel that's not made by a person is not considered an ohel, and the Gemara is going to ask on that. You'll notice even in the text a long question. So what we have on the side of the Gemara, we've written as follows: HaGemara makshe. The Gemara will ask, Eich itochein Reb Yehuda omar. How could it be that Reb Yehuda says the chol ohel she'enoi osui bidei odom enoi ohel, that an ohel that's not made by man does not have the status of an ohel? When we know that Reb Yehuda himself relies somech al shvorim ke'ohel, he relies on oxen to serve as an ohel kedei lachsois b'fnei tumas hatahom. One of the roles of ohel, in addition to its being an overshadow, a canopy, an overhang, something that covers, it also is something that blocks. In other words, if you have tuma underneath the ohel, and there is something above the ohel, that which is above the ohel does not become tummy, because the overhang or the overshadow blocks the tuma from rising. So we know that Reb Yehuda relies on oxen, where we'll see a little later, they would place a child on the top of an ox, on the ox's back, so as to prevent tumah that might be on the ground, or buried in the ground, from rising up through the ox and then being metama the child that's riding on its back. We didn't explain why they do this, but there is such a necessity of protecting the child from Tumas Mace, and Reb Yehuda says in order to accomplish that, the child would ride on the back of an ox. That's kidei lachzois b'fnei Tumas HaTahoim. Tumas HaTahoim literally means depths, but in our case it has to do with sofek tuma, the doubt there might be corpse material underground, and corpse material underground, body or what have you, the tumah rises, penetrates the ground, and will affect anything above it until it hits an overhang which will block the tumah from rising above it. So but by riding on the back of the ox, the tumah will be blocked. And we indicate here, kidei lachzois b'fnei tumas hatahom eitzel hatinoikos b'por aduma. Now, the whole issue of the children that we mentioned has to do with the need to draw water for the por aduma. And in the case of the por aduma, a lot of stringencies were imposed to protect and keep away from any form of tumah, particularly tumas mace. So if you have the Pirush Chai open in front of you, on page 67 of the Pirush Chai, the book of illustrations that we have been using since the beginning of the Masechta, you can see an example of an illustration, let us say 340. A child is sitting on the back of the ox, and wherever the ox walks, even if there's tumah underneath the ox, the tumah will rise. Animals themselves don't become tameh, and it'll stop under the ox, not rising above to affect the child on the ox's back. And as we said, this was necessary in order to ensure that the drawing of the water for the purposes of Pora Aduma, mixing the water with the ashes of the red heifer that's eventually used to mitaher, to purify people that were defiled to the dead, this whole process has to be done in a state of purity. And to ensure that purity, so we mentioned that children that themselves were never tameh, how can you tell me that a child never was exposed to tumas mace? After all, there is always a possibility that anywhere you walk there might be a mace buried underground and you don't know about it. So the Gemara will tell us, if you look in your Pirush Chai on page 300, illustration 336 on page 66 at the bottom, you can see an example of a community where the community is built on a, you can call it on a cliff or an overhang, where in that thickness of ground there are no bodies buried, and if there are any bodies buried underneath the gap that you see on the lower level, so the tumah would rise and hit the bottom of that overhang and not affect the children that are growing up in that community. So from birth, the children would be in that community, and then when the time came to draw water for the Pora Aduma, they would ride on the backs of oxen out of the community to the Shiloach, the stream, the live spring from which water was drawn for the Pora Aduma, and everything was done in a state of guaranteed purity. What do we see from all of this story? What do we see? We see that the ox, which is functioning as an ohel insofar as it's blocking the tumah from underneath, from rising above it, which is one of the functions of an ohel, it works even though it's not an ohel osubi de'odam, even though it wasn't made by man. The ox is an animal. It's born. It's not something created by people. And Rabbi Huda says this is what you're supposed to do. So the point of this question is, very simply, Shitas Rabbi Huda is such that even an oil shalom osui bidei adam is considered an ohel. That is what we will see in the long question. Now there's a lot of other detail in this piece of Gemara, but we're in Gemara markings always trying to focus on the main point. So we've explained the main point, and if you look in your Gemara, in the marked Shas Ozer Gemara that you see on your screen, or you might have in front of you, you see after the long question, a diamond will appear, and we indicate that these diamonds are tshuvos l'she'ela ha'adiniel. This is under our Mivneh heading on the side, in addition to the double underline which introduces Ravdimi, Kioso Ravdimi, and Kioso Ravin on Omid Beis. There will be three answers to this particular problem. How do you resolve Shitas Rav Yehuda with what he says in our Mishnah, that an oyel is an oyel only if it's also bidei adam, versus Rabbi Yehuda's comment regarding the oxen, where we see he acknowledges the oyel even if it's not an oyel ha'osui bidei adam? Now that we've mapped out the structure of the Gemara, we turn to the text itself, five lines from the top, second word on the line, beginning of a long question. After having said that, namely, after Rabbi Yehuda having said that an oil she'eino osui bidei adam, an oil that's not made by man, is not considered a halachic oil, the sovereign Rabbi Yehuda, is that so? That kol oil she'eino osui bidei adam eino oil, that any oil that's not made by man is not considered an oil? V'raminu, we raise a contradiction. And again, I know we're sounding a little repetitious, but for the main point will appear where the dashed underlining comes up later in the source. So here we get into all the background we described before. Illustration 336 is what we would look at right now. Chatseros hoyu benuyos b'yushalayim al gabi hasela. There were courtyards with homes that were built on rock. Now, rock, people don't bury their dead in rock. So the underneath these houses, there are no people buried. So there's no tumas mace directly under the houses. V'tachteim chalal, and under the rock, then there's a large opening, the big gap that you see in the picture, where this community is basically built on a geologic overhang. The overhang itself is made of solid rock. Underneath that, a gap. And below the gap, more ground. And why was this? Why did they have these courtyards with their houses built over here? B'nei kever hatom, in order to avoid kever, a grave hatom that's in the depths that we don't know about. So we describe these communities and how they're built. Umaviyin noshim ubros, they would then bring pregnant ladies. V'yoldos sham, they would bear their children, they would give birth over there in these houses. Umegadlus b'neim sham lepora, and they would raise their children till they're 7-8 years old of age over there, for the specific purpose of then participating in the war, in the drawing of the water for the pora aduma, for the red heifer. Umevin shvarim, and they would bring, in anticipation of going out to draw the water, they would bring oxen, the algaban, dalsois, and on their backs there would be doors. You can see an illustration of what that would look like, a door on the back of the oxen, 337, and there would be doors on their backs, flat on the back of the ox. The tinoikis yoshvin al gaban, children would sit on them. The kaisis shall even be them, and cups, vessels made of stone. Stone is a material that is not mekabel tumah, it's not subject to defilement. So in the spirit of Por Aduma, where we said before we try to avoid any form of tumah, they would use stone cups. Higiu l'shiloach, when they would arrive at the shiloach, the name of a live spring of water. Yordu l'soich hamayim, they would descend into the water. People aren't buried in river beds, so they would go into the water. Umilum, they would fill up the stone cups. The olu, arise upon the oxen. The yoshvu lohem, and sit there. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi was illustrated in 337, in illustration 337, he says, Mimakoyme hoya mishalshel, the child didn't go down into the water, but would stay on the door that's on the back of the ox, umimale, and draw the water, bitnei kever hatahom, so as to avoid any contact with any dead. So apparently Rabbi Yossi is more cautious and considers maybe there is a body buried maybe under the water or what have you, but he's more cautious. V'tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo hayu mevi'in dalsois, ela shvarim. Rabbi Yehuda says they didn't use doors whatsoever. They didn't use those planks, but they relied on the oxen themselves. Now, v'ha shvarim de'ehel de'eno osu b'dei odomhu. An ox is serving here as an oil, and it's not made by, it's not something crafted by men. The Kotoni, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo hayu mevi'in dalsos ela shvarim. Rabbi Yehuda says that they did not bring doors at all. They just relied on the back of the ox. And that was an oil that would block the tumah. We see in the Rashi, the third line under the Gemara text, there's a little star there. Alma Ashmin and Rabbi Yehuda, the Shidrosin shel shvarim. Rabbi Yehuda is then telling us that the spine of the oxen, shehi ke'ein gag, it serves like a roof. The halal shel behema, who it's the roof of the animal's interior. The halal shel behema hu ha'oyel amafsik, so that the shedra is overshadowing the interior of the animal. The animal representing the halal, the airspace. And it's blocking any tumah from underneath. Even though the ox wasn't made by man. So that's the question. We see from here, contrary to what Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah, that any oil that's not made bidei adam is not an oil, here we see an oil that's not made bidei adam, not made by man, and it is functioning as an oil. Ki osa Rav Dimi, Omer Rav Elazar, answer number one, Moide Reb Yehuda Kemaloi Egroif. Reb Yehuda concedes that if the oil is more than a tefach wide, and Melo Egroif is a fist wide, there's a hand breadth is basically four fingers, and a Melo Egroif is a fist. So if something is a fist wide, you can see in illustration 341 what we mean by a Melo Egroif. Slightly more than a tefach, he is modeh that even if it's that wide, then even if it's not made bidei adam, it is still an ohel. Tanya nami hachi, we have a Tanaic source supporting this. Umoide Rabbi Yehuda b'shkifin u'menekike hasloim. Rabbi Yehuda will concede in formations, like you see in illustration 347. Those are, you see, shkifin and Nekike Hasela. These are gaps in rock formations, gaps and crevices that are in rock formations. He is modeh that they will be considered an ohel. And again, these rock formations were not made by man, but since they are larger than the gap or the overhang is greater than a tefach, it is considered an ohel. The Gemara asks, and we have triangles, and on the side we indicate these triangles are shnei kushos al hatshuva shabuta moide b'melo egrov. Two questions will appear on what we just said. Those on two questions on Rebbe Lozer's answer. V'hare delis diyesh bo kamo egrovin. The door, and we'll explain that in a moment. But just translating the Gemara, the issue with the illustration before concerning the door, there are many egrofin. There are many fistfuls, fist sizes. We'll call them fistfuls from the floor up to the door. And we saw the illustration of the door in illustration 337. And Rabbi Yehuda insisted that should be no door. It would be more like you see in 300, not in 337, but rather in 340. Rabbi Yehuda would say, you go like in illustration 340. So Rabbi Yehuda was saying, I don't want the use of doors. Even though, from the floor up to the door, there's many egroifim, it appears, the Havamina then is, in asking, in other words, in order to ask this question, since it's not the derech to make an ohel like that, it doesn't work as an ohel. Rashi explains this five lines from the bottom where we dashed underline in the Rashi text, Kosalka Daite Mishum De'ein Derech Ohel Bekach. The thinking is it's not a normal way to make an ohel. The Kol Shekein Shvarim is certainly to rely on an ox to serve as an oihel, to serve as a block, a blocker of tumah, certainly not. So the Gemara is asking, how can you say that Reb Yehuda is moide when you're dealing with a larger size? We see that that's not the case. Reb Yehuda doesn't moide when there's kama egroifim. What seems to be bothering Reb Yehuda is that if it's not a normal kind of ohel, it's not a canopy, a natural overhang of ground, a house, it's an unusual situation of ohel, Reb Yehuda simply doesn't acknowledge its effectiveness. So we're asking, how can Reb Elazar say that Reb Yehuda is modeh when they're kama egroifim? There's another consideration, and so the explanation of kama egroif, mole egroif, wouldn't work. Omar Abaye. Abaye and Rava defend Reb Elazar's position in the face of this question. The issue of Reb Yehuda and the doors simply is lo hutzrichu lahavi delosos. Reb Yehuda says they didn't require. Rabbi doesn't require their bringing of doors. If they bring the doors, it would work, but they don't need to bring the doors. And therefore, the point that we made in the question that he wouldn't acknowledge, we'll say, an unusual kind of, oh, that's not true. His disavowing or his rejection of the doors isn't an utter rejection. It's simply you don't need to bring it. Rava says, in fact, Reb Yudah was rejecting the doors, but not on the basis of its being ineffective as an oyel, but for a separate consideration, as the Gemara will explain. Rav Amar lo hayu mevi'in d'losos kol ikur. They didn't bring doors whatsoever. As far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, mei shadaita shatina gasa alav. If the child is sitting on a flat surface, the child can feel comfortable. That's secure. Daita shatina gasa alav. Gasa means he'll feel secure. And as a result of that, Shemo Yoitzi Roisho Echad Meivarav Yizhame. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Bekever Hatahoim. Since he feels secure, the child will edge over to the edge of the door and lean over. And everything we've been trying to accomplish to keep the kid away from the unknown grave, the Kever Hatahoim will be lost over here. Because if the kid peers over the edge of the door, there might be at any given point in the trip to the Mei Shiloach, to the stream, at any given point there might be a body buried there, and the kid by peering over the edge of the door, he doesn't have the benefit of the ohel to block the tumah anymore. He'll be peering directly over a grave, and the tumah will affect him. So Rava explains Rabbi Yehuda's position is don't bring doors because of this so-called outside consideration, the fear of the kid feeling a sense of security and peering over, but not because the door and the ox are ineffective as an oyel. So they are effective as an oyel, and Rebbe Lozer's answer stands. We continue, as we said before, we're at the top line of Amud Beis, of Chof Aleph Amud Beis, Tanya Kavosi de Rava, and we have a Tanaic source that supports Rava's explanation of Reb Yehuda and his rejection of the doors. Reb Yehuda Oimer, lo hayu mevi'im d'alsus k'ikr, they wouldn't bring doors to begin with, but nay, shedaita shetina gasalov, the child feels a sense of, would feel a sense of security, and he'll inch over to the edge, shema yoytzi roishoy o echa me'evarv, he might stick his head out or one of his limbs, v'yatami bekever hatahom, and become defiled by the possible unknown grave. Ella, Rabbi Yehuda tells you, what should you do? Mevi'im shvarim hamitzrim shekreseseim rechavais. They would bring a large Egyptian oxen whose bellies were very wide. Vatinoikis yoshun al gabeim. The children would sit on the back, on top of the oxen. The kaisis shelevin bidem, and stone cups in their hands. Igiv l'shiloch. When they arrive at the live spring, yardu umolum, they would descend into the water, fill up their stone cups. The olu v'yoshu lohen al gabeim, and then arise, ascend to the top of the ox again. The Gemara asks another question on Rebbe Lozer's explanation of Rebbe Yehuda and the egrof pshat. V'hare mita d'yesh bo kama egrofim. The case of the bed in the sukkah. And when you're dealing with the bed in the sukkah, the bed has a number of egrofim. It's Rashi says, "Diyesh kama egrofim in mina chavolim lekarka," from the bed straps to the floor. There are many egrofim. It's a person doesn't put his mattress directly on the floor. There's a gap. And utnan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Noegim hoyinu shoyinu yeshenim tachas hamito b'fnei azekenim. Rabbi Yehuda says, we used to sleep under the beds in the sukkah, indicating to us that the bed is not going to be functioning as an ohel, blocking us from being considered under the schach. Rashi adds, on the second line from the Tagnoaginoinu, Almo Oyla Roy Lav Oyelu, this kind of temporary ohel, a bed as opposed to a house or some kind of permanent structure, a bed, Rashi classifies it oel aroi, it's not considered an oel. So what we see from here is that something that is of a non-permanent ohel nature doesn't function as an oel. So how can you explain before that Rebbe Yehuda, as long as you have kama egroifim, as long as you have an egrof, that would be considered an ohel? And with that explanation, we also explained how Rebbe Yehuda acknowledges the oxen as functioning as an ohel. Why should the oxen function as an ohel? Just because you have an egrof in size, that's not enough of an explanation of what could serve as an ohel. The Gemara says, shiny mita. The case of the mita is different. In other words, everything we've said up till now is true. If Rabbi Yehuda will be modeh that an oil that's not also bidei adam is considered an oil, provided it's an egrof in size. And as far as the oxen are concerned, it's true there ain't also bidei adam, but the back of the ox is at least an egrof in size. And as far as it being a non-permanent type of ohel, that doesn't bother us. You'll say the bed didn't seem to function as an ohel, and yet the ox is going to function as an ohel. Well, the reason the bed doesn't function as an ohel, the Gemara says, shiny mitosh hoyul gabo asuya. The bed is not an ohel. It won't block the person underneath from being considered in the sukkah, because the bed's purpose is for the use of its top, to be on top of the bed, not to be under the bed. Therefore, anyone who's under the bed is not functioning as an ohel. The Gemara asks, Shvorim Nami Legabon Asuyin, the oxen, well, their backs are made for being on top. In other words, just like you said that the bed is not an ohel because it's designed for being on top of it, oxen also are, their backs are designed, it's designed for you to be on top of the ox. Ki also Ravin Omar Abolazar, shiny shvorim, the case of the oxen are different, in other words, are different from the bed. Hail umaginim al haroyim bechamut neachamut shamut neachshamim. Oxen are large animals, and the shepherds can crawl under the ox in the summer to protect themselves from the sun. The ox will serve as a shade, and they crawl under the ox in the rain to protect them from the rain. So the oxen are designed for their underneath as well. Gemara asks, "Ihachi mito nami hoyo umegino al min olam misandolam shetachteha." Well, if you're saying the oxen are designed for their underneath, well, beds also, people put their shoes, min olam and sandolam, closed shoes, open shoes, underneath beds. And we're seeing then that if you're saying that the shore, the ox, is considered an oil because of its underneath use, the bed also should be considered an oil because of its underneath use. And yet we said that they would sleep under the beds. That's a simon that it's not an oil. So we're still in a problematic situation. How do you resolve the ox situation with the bed situation? Elo Omar Rava, a third response. Shiny shvorim, oxen are different. Hayo v'asuyim lohogein al bnei me'ayim shelahem. The oxen are designed, and here we're not repeating the answer of being underneath them, and the, as is the case with the shepherds, but rather the oxen are designed not for their tops, not to be riding on its back, but they are designed to protect their innards. You have the top of the ox is its back, and then from there it descends its spine, its ribs, its skin, and all of that is designed to protect its inner organs. Shinemar or Ubosur Talbisheni Uvaatsomois Vegidim Tisochini. Now we dashed on the line Tisochini to show that it's called Schach, that the ox and its anatomy is viewed as its upper bones, the top of it is called Schach. So that is different. And of course, Schach has the Ohel connotation to it, which is different than the case of the bed. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda will concede that an Ohel She'enu Osui Bidei Adam, if it's an Egroif, will function as an Ohel, as we saw in the case of the oxen. And Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, in the context of the Poraduma. However, if it's not a Moloi Egroif, it's less, it's just a Tefach, so Rabbi Yehuda will differ with the Chachamim, and on that, in that case, we'll tell you that an Oyel that is Eino Osu B'nei Odom, that measures a mere Tefach, is not considered an Ohel. And as far as questions raised on this, we'll call definition of Rabbi Yehuda based on the oxen and the Egroif, the Gemara had raised a couple questions from the situation of the bed, and you can see we answered the question showing each time that the case of the ox is different than the case of the bed. The bed is not an ohel, and the ox is considered an ohel. The Eboyas Emo, another approach, that we can tell you that in general a bed is considered an ohel, but relative to the sukkah, it's not considered an ohel. Viboyasemo, Rabbi Yehuda Litame, Rabbi Yehuda in justifying sleeping under the bed in the sukkah, he could tell you that, as we said, the bed is considered an ohel. However, relative to the sukkah, it has no significance. The Omar, Rabbi Yehuda has said, sukkah diras keva bo'ina. Rabbi Yehuda's standard regarding a sukkah is that it's supposed to be a more permanent type structure. And relative to the bed, the sukkah is permanent. V'havele mito diras aroi v'sikah elokeva. The bed would be considered a temporary type dwelling. The sukkah, a permanent type dwelling. V'lo osi oyol aroi umevatel oyol keva. The temporary type ohel doesn't have the power to neutralize the permanent type ohel. And therefore, if you, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, if you're under the bed, so you're under an ohel aroi, but that doesn't serve to block you from being considered in the sukkah, and therefore you fulfill your mitzvah of sukkah even if you're sleeping under the bed. The Gemara asks, V'ha Rabbi Shimon Diomar Nami Sukkas Sukkah diras keva bo'inon. We know Rabbi Shimon to hold that the sukkah has to be diras keva. Shitas Rabbi Shimon, we've learned this in the first parak, that the sukkah is supposed to have basically four walls, indicating that it's supposed to be a diras keva, not the more flimsy type structure that the Rabbanon hold. He wants the presence of four walls, so he holds diras keva. And yet. The osi oyol aroi mavate oyol keva, and yet, as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, the oyol we saw Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah that said that sleeping under the bed would be a way to violate, you know, to not be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah. In the Mishnah at the beginning of our perek on Chof Amud Beis, Rabbi Shimon is the one that quoted the story of Tevi, Rabbi Gamliel's slave, sleeping under the bed, and he was able to do so only because he was not chayav in sukkah. But someone who's chayav in sukkah cannot sleep under the bed. So we see here is someone that holds sukkah is a diras keva, and the bed is not place that one can sleep underneath it. Here you see Rabbi Shimon says that the temporary type ohel, the bed, does neutralize the effect of being considered in the sukkah. The Gemara says that's not a kasha, that's not a problem. Baha pliki, this is the point of machlokes. More savar osi oil aroy umavatil okeva. Reb Shimon is of the opinion that the temporary type oil neutralizes the permanent structure. More savar Reb Yehuda is more lenient. Lo osi oil aroy umavatil oil keva. There isn't strength to the oil aroy, the bed, to neutralize the oil keva. So in looking over this sukkah, you can see that we were dealing basically with one topic till this point, the analysis of Shitas Reb Yehuda concerning an oil she'eino osi b'dei odom. So the bottom line is, as far as Reb Yehuda is concerned, an oil that's eino osi b'dei odom could be an oil if it's an egg growth in size. And the basis of that is the shvarim, the oxen, in the case of the Pora Aduma. And Rebbe Lozer is the one that told us that he'll be Moida, Rebbe Yehuda would be Moida, will concede because it's a Melo Egrov. And then, as we saw in the Gemara, a number of questions were asked on that, and we saw Rebbe Lozer's explanation refined as we went along, and leaving us with the original point that if it's a malo egrof, even if it's eino osi b'dei odom, it can function as an ohel. We continue in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Shimon, Maisa b'tevi avdo, Tanya. Amar Rabbi Shimon, Misichas l'shorim amliel, from the talk, Rashi says, Sichas is loshem sichas chulin v'simcha. Friendly, common talk, as opposed to a Torah lecture or a legal ruling. Sicha is common, friendly speech. So Rabbi Shimon says from the common talk of Rabbi Gamliel, lomadnu shnei dvarim, we learn two things. You see, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Gamliel, in effect, was telling a story. We saw he told a story. He said to the Zekanim, "Hey, do you see my slave Tevi? He's a Talmud Chacham. He knows that Avodim are exempt from Sukkah, therefore he sleeps under the bed." So he was telling a story, and Rabbi Shimon says that from his Sicha, we learn two things. Number one, Lamadnu Shavodim Pturim Min HaSukkah. We learn that slaves are exempt from Sukkah. That one who is obligated in mitzvah sukkah and sleeps under the bed does not fulfill his sukkah obligation. The Gemara asks, "Valemo midvorov shorav gamliel." You notice we're using some dashed underlining so you can see the problem. Rabbi Shimon, in this Tanaic source, used the term misichasa shorav gamliel. Why not use a more common expression, midvorov, from the words of Rabbi Gamliel? The Gemara answers, Milsa agav urche komashmalon. Rabbi Shimon is telling us something by the way. Kiha diyama Rav Acha bar Ado v'amrilo. Another version of names is Rav Acha bar Ado omar Rav Hamnuna omar Rav. Minayin, from where do we know? Shafilu sichas chulin shel tamidei chachomim tzricha limud. That even the light speech of Torah scholars is something that requires one's attention, namely from the common speech of Torah scholars, one can extract wisdom and information and halacha. From where do we know that? Shenemar, we have a posuk in Tehillim that speaks in the context of the Torah. It says, V'olehu lo ibol. Even the leaves, a leaf of a plant, of a tree, is a minor aspect of it. It's a small aspect. The leaf is there, it falls off, it withers, but the leaves of Torah, and Torah sages lo ibol, they do not wither, indicating even the light speech of Torah sages is a source of information, and that's what Rabbi Shimon was telling us when he used the term in the Braisa Misichos Shem Leorim. Well, being a great Torah scholar, listen to his stories, and you will learn halachas, as we saw. We continue with the Mishnah, and on the side of the Gemara, we indicate under our nosei, our topic heading, Hasomech Schach Al Gabi Kare Hamita, person who supports Schach on the bed. Kare literally are bed legs. However, you can have a bed that's constructed like you see in illustration 349 in the Pirush Chai on page 69. The bed's legs are also its walls. They're you can see their boards midway of up from the bottom. The cross planks are built to serve as the top of the bed, but in effect it's a three-sided bed. And where's the schach? It's placed on the top of what we saw here, kare hamita. So one who places his schach on the bed, the Tanakama says it's kosher, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda pos psula. The reason Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's not kosher is because the schach is being supported by something that is subject to tuma, to defilement. This is a, we'll call this a chiddush, namely, even if the schach itself is kosher material, but it's being supported by something that is, when we say kosher material, means a dover sheinu mekabel tuma. Rabbi Yehuda, according to one of the pshatim in the Gemara, goes further, and he says, even if the schach is made of non-tuma subject material, dover sheinu mekabel tuma, that's not enough. We want that which supports the schach to also have that qualification that it's a dover she'eino mekabel tuma. As we say, that's one of the two pshatim that we will see in the Gemara. We turn now to the Mishnah. Asomech sukasa bekare hamito, share one who supports his sukkah, that means the schach is placed on the top of the bed, as we see illustrated in 349. It's kosher. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im eino yecholo lamoid bifnei atzma psula. If the schach cannot stand independent of the bed, but the schach is supported exclusively by the bed, it's not acceptable. What would be a scenario where the schach can stand independent of the bed? So we'll see that later. My time with Rabbi Yehuda. What is the reason behind Rabbi Yehuda's disqualification of the bed, of having the schach placed over the bed, directly touching the bed? Pligi bo Rabbi Zerov, Rabbi Yavo bar Momo. You have a machlokis amoroyim between Rabbi Zerov and Rabbi Yavo. Chad omar mipnei she'ein lo keva. The sukkah that we have here is a non-permanent type structure. A bed is something you move from place to place. And Rabbi Yehuda is here consistent with his shita, with his known opinion that a sukkah needs to be a diras keva. We mentioned that in our earlier sukkia. And the bed not conforming to that requirement of being a diras keva, hence this sukkah is disqualified. V'chad omar mitnei shema'amido b'dover ha'mekabel tuma, because you are supporting the schach on an item, on something that is subject to defilement. Rashi adds, shema'amido v'yafopi shelo ilomanu psuo schach, even though we have learned the fact something's mekabel tuma as a disqualifying factor only with regard to the actual schach. Hoyel v'ikoro sheschach elu ma'amidim, since in this case the entire schach is being supported. Have a ki'ilu sikech b'dover makabel tuma. Since its whole support is based on the makabel, the dover makabel tuma, it's as if you made the schach out of a dover hamakabel tuma. The Gemara asks, "My binai, what is the difference between these two explanations?" The answer: glance at illustration 350. What do we see there? We see metal poles set up, and across the top of the metal poles are makabel tuma. However, the metal poles are not something that is a diras aroi. It's not something that you move from place to place. So the Gemara says, kigoyin shenoat shpudim shel barzel. The point of difference between the two pshatim we saw, between the two explanations we saw, would be in the case of someone who wedged in some metal spits, v'sikech al aleihem, and covered them with schach. Laman domar lefi she'ein lo keva, hare yesh lo keva. According to the opinion that says that they don't have permanence, well, this has permanence, so it will be kosher. And the opinion that says you're supporting the schach with something that is subject to tuma absorption, and that is a disqualifying factor. So hare ma'amida b'dover ha'makabel tuma, supporting the schach on metal poles is supporting it on something that's subject to tuma, and hence it will not be acceptable. So the metal pole case will be the point of difference between the two explanations we gave above regarding the bed. If you hold the bed's problem was Ein Lo Keva, this won't be a problem. If you hold the bed's problem is Dover Makabel Tuma, this will be a problem. Omar Abaye, Lo Shanu Elo Somach. That which Rabbi Yehuda says that the bed is puzzle, it's only if you place the schach directly on the bed. Avol, see, and when we say directly on the bed, we're referring to diagram 349. The walls are the walls of the sukkah. There are in effect the legs of the bed. So that's the bed. Avol, if you look at illustration 351, look at it closely. What do we see in that illustration? We see the same bed as we saw in 350. However, surrounding the bed are poles, and upon the poles, the schach is laid. The schach is not laid directly on the bed, but the bed is serving as the walls of the sukkah. So the Gemara says, Avol sikech al gabi hamito. The dashed underlining here is to contrast the word al gav with the word somach. Somach is to place the schach directly on the bed sides. The algav hamito means above the bed. You didn't place the schach on the bed's legs, but rather on poles. That's kshero. That's okay. My taima. Why is this okay? As far as the schach is concerned, the schach is not going to be moved. So the schach is supported in a permanent type fashion. According to the opinion that says that the bed would be a problem because you're supporting it on something that's mekabel tuma, hare ein mamida b'davar mekabel tuma. The case of somach on the yesedos, on these poles, these are not metal poles. These are wooden poles. And as such, they're not mekabel tuma. And so from either standpoint, the sukkah in illustration 351 is something that Rebbe Yehuda will also acknowledge as being kosher. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.